Broadcasting from Duxu Village on Jeju Island, this is the Korea File, a weekly podcast about music, culture, and society from around the peninsula. I'm Andre Goulet. On this episode, Anne Bush is a writer, teacher, and activist from Berkeley, California. Her work for the Jeju Weekly has brought an articulate and insightful outsider's take on the art, history, and culture of this conflicted island. In this interview, she reckons with the value of the economic benefits of tourism on Jeju Island versus the sanctity of cultural solidarity for its people in the face of massive socioeconomic changes. So what have been the articles you've written so far?
When I first got here, it was a lot of like stuff for my family and friends, like, oh, today I discovered Emart, you know, like, oh my gosh, there's stones on the ground that massage your feet, like my first initial Korean discoveries. And then now that I'm getting more situated and comfortable here, I'm focusing more on like what Jeju is in the larger scheme of things with globalization and the art scene here. And I did a cool blog about food, my first Korean love affair with food, and I really enjoyed writing about that.
Anne Bush is a writer, teacher, and a resident of Jeju Island. And I wanted to talk about some of the background to particularly tourism. Mm-hmm. I wanted to discuss globalization, but I think on Jeju, it really begins with the tourism issue. Mm-hmm. So just tell me what you think of these. Tourism has increased by about 1 million a year since 2008 to 12 million this year.
Wow.
And this is an island of 500,000 people.
Oh my goodness.
So what are the reasons behind the tourism? Well, it's not primarily Chinese people, but like I think 3 million out of the 12 million are Chinese or something. And that's increased exponentially as Chinese people have had, the new middle class has had more ability to travel. So they don't have to have visas to come to Jeju like they do for the rest of Korea. It is an hour flight from Shanghai, which is
right.
Super close,
yeah.
2.5 hours from Beijing. If you buy property as a foreigner, you get permanent resident status, which gives you access to Korean medical and employment and educational benefits, and you don't have to give up your citizenship, which is an awesome bonus. 70% of the $6 billion in foreign investment on Jeju is Chinese.
Wow.
In 2014, 68% of Jeju residents said that the growth in the number of Chinese tourists was not helping Jeju's development.
How many percent?
68%.
68.
So pretty big majority.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
Oh my goodness.
So all of these numbers and stuff sort of speak to, yeah, the tourism of Jeju. Mm. So what have you seen in your experience in your life here?
Well, I live in Shinjeju, New Jeju, I guess. I live like 2 blocks away from Jaewon, which is Jaewon Walking Street, and that's where all the like clothes stores are. People call it Chinatown. Like everyone kind of, like my Korean friends kind of always make little comments as we're driving through, and so. When you talk about how many Chinese people are coming, I definitely witness that every day. Outside my building, there are these humongous buses that park, just bus after bus after bus of Chinese tourists who like to shop at the duty-free stores. So I'm like right in the thick of things there, so I maybe am more exposed to the Chinese tourists than in other places in Jeju. Obviously, I mean, I don't consider myself a tourist, but I am a tourist here in some ways, so I'm also connected to the Westerners coming through, and we've kind of talked about how Jeju is kind of feels like living on Disneyland. You know, you just see a lot of these people coming through and taking pictures, and it's a little weird to be like, hey, dude, I live here. Like, let me through.
So you wrote in a blog entry on jejujive.wordpress.com that Jeju's in a state of flux.
So a little bit about how I got here. I was living in Mexico for a few years teaching English, and I met this wonderful couple, Jorge and Wendy, in Puerto Escondido, Oaxaca, and they worked here in Jeju 4 years ago. They lived here. They worked here for 2 years, and they convinced me to come to Jeju. And before I came, they like prepared me. You know, they told me all the information, things to expect. And so when I came here, I felt very prepared.
What kind of preparation was it? Like, what did they tell you?
Oh, like places to go and how to deal with like the work situation and things like that. But like, when I came, there were like whole neighborhoods that they didn't tell me about that they've built since they left. And then when I talked to them about things I was seeing, they're like, I don't know what that is. That's not what it was like when we lived there. And so I was like, I'm quickly realized that the Jeju I was living in wasn't the Jeju that they had lived in 4 years ago. And as I've talked to more and more people who've lived here for like almost a decade, they describe Jeju like 10 years ago being completely different. And as you're driving through Jeju, you see the construction and these like empty freeways and you just feel it. You just feel the construction and the changes, and buildings go up so much more quickly here than like places I've been in the U.S. or Mexico. Like, 1 week you pass a street and it's like an empty lot. The next week it looks like there's a full building there. And like, where did this come from?
What does globalization mean to us? How would we define that?
The exchange of people, of things, of ideas, of culture. Yeah, it's like the planet is being shaken up like a snow globe, you know, and things are landing in different places and getting mixed up in strange ways. And we talk about globalization here on Jeju. There are people from all walks of life from different countries here, but when I think of globalization, I think of how like the larger power structures, be it from like multinational corporations or nation states like the U.S. or China, kind of coming in and adding what they want. I mean, that for me, that's more of the negative side of globalization.
Yeah, I always think of the economics and mm-hmm. in terms of trade investments mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And on Jeju, we're seeing that, like in the statistics I was mm-hmm. Talking about. So on Jeju, do we see positives in terms of globalization?
Yeah, I'd say so. You know, Korea has grown so quickly in the past few decades, and there are plenty of scary things about that. But at the end of the day, like, Korea is a burgeoning country, and it's great that the quality of life is improving for Korean people. And my friends have described Jeju, like, back in 1950s, after the Korean War, like, Korea was one of the poorest countries in the world, like sub-Saharan Africa is now, and Jeju was the poorest region of Korea. And to think that not too long ago it was like that, and now it's this beautiful beautiful island with these I work at a hagwon where I'm helping kids go to these international schools, and it's not just Korean kids, it's Chinese kids too. And so it's like the cream of the crop, like upper crust of Asia. I call them like the little princes and princesses, and they're all trying to get into these schools here on Jeju Island. You know, like, so I feel like at one point Korea was on the bottom and they've just like zoomed to the top. And it's complicated, but I don't know if I think that's something to be proud of for Koreans and Jeju.
You've described what's happening on Jeju as gringo style globalization. So what does that mean to you?
Some of the first things I noticed were we're coming to the island where, like, there was Quiznos and Papa John's and Starbucks and Burger King and McDonald's. And I went to E-Mart and Lotte Mart, and it, you know, the aisles were full of American products. And I was like, I came to Korea to be in Korea. Like, why am I seeing all this stuff from home? You know, you walk into a Starbucks in Jaewon, and it's basically the same layout as a Starbucks in San Diego, where I'm from, and the same as a Starbucks in Mexico City, where I lived. And I don't travel to go to American corporations, like companies. I don't do that. So that gringo-style globalization is describing that aspect. I don't think that the American corporations are the biggest problem on the island, but I do find them really annoying. And there's so much rich culture here in Korea and in Asia, and I do get a little sad when I see like people kind of leaning towards Western cultures and customs, because I'm from America and I know that, you know, there's problems there. And
I like the notion of a dichotomy on Jeju. Mm-hmm. Down-to-earth local versus big bucks global. Mm-hmm. So break that down for me. Big bucks global, I mean, it's like the Papa John's and the Starbucks.
Right, yeah, and the big hotels and resorts and amusement parks.
And the down-to-earth local mm-hmm. refers to the stuff we kind of see on Jeju that makes it so special. Mm-hmm. But what is that?
They're the little villages. The little villages, if you just kind of like make a wrong turn off of these main roads on Jeju, you'll land in this like totally different little world of like village country life, with the tiny, tiny little windy roads, and like grandmas hunched over in their like backyard, like farm basically. And you know, you see the haenyeo, the women divers out there diving for abalone and fish. And I haven't seen the miniature horses, but I hear that they're still being used to farm. And or if you walk into like an old school Korean restaurant and have a traditional meal with the locals, it just feels really, yeah, down to earth.
There's a good example just a couple blocks from here. Mm-hmm. The Mega Box mm-hmm. is showing Avengers 2.
Mm-hmm.
And right behind it is those two little thatched roof houses.
Yes.
They're just down the alley.
Yeah.
Preserved from time immemorial, like mm-hmm. like they're 120 years old or whatever.
Yeah, those are the houses that Tommy showed us, I think.
On Tommy's famous history walk a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
But that sort of contrast, like, I mean, I love that about Jeju particularly mm-hmm. because so much of the old culture is still really rich mm-hmm. and much more alive than mm-hmm. what I experienced on the mainland mm-hmm. when I was living there. But that dichotomy of getting a cup of Starbucks and then walking over and, getting to see some traditional history mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. kind of special. Okay, so you've noticed some interracial resentment. What have you observed?
Well, I said this previously, like, I live next to Jaewon, and my Korean friends always make a comment about it being Chinatown, and there's always like there's a tone you hear, you know, and, you know, it's crazy, like, the Chinese are bringing so much money to this island, and that's a good thing for Jeju, you know, Jeju's economy, but the locals are not happy about that. You know, but my friend Sabine says that Jaewon used to be Japantown. Like, Jaewon was full of Japanese restaurants before. And so there's, now it seems like, you know, people are irritated with the Chinese, but maybe before it was the Japanese. And
interesting.
But I don't hear anything, not often, like outright racist remarks, but there's always an undertone that I'm uncomfortable with, but I'm like, I really don't know enough, you know, to...
A lot of these are sort of old tensions, because the relationship between China and Korea, or Japan and Korea, or Japan and China are old. And lots of ups and downs, and really deep downs, like really bad downs.
Yeah.
As an aside, is it Baoxiang Street in Chinese? They call the walking street?
Oh, I don't know.
It's named after a Chinese conglomerate that sent 11,000 of their employees over here on a tourist junket in 2011.
Oh, wow.
So they named the street and branded it.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Okay, so you wrote about the construction of a narrative on Jeju. How would you articulate the narrative as you've perceived it?
I guess I've seen I've been to lots of tourist spots here on the island, and so I'm always, you know, reading the little blurbs at exhibits and stuff like that. I've been to the Jeju Natural History and Culture Museum. Is that what it's called? The
The Natural History Museum?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's also culture. Okay. It's culture, too, because it's really weird. They have exhibits of like animals and like nature, and then you go into the next room and it's full of like mannequins of Koreans, and it feels kind of strange. But anyways, it's a lovely museum, but the narrative is very much like the Haenyeo are beautiful, and look at the farmers with their mini horses, and it's very bucolic. Sunshiny. Everything's really cute on Jeju Island, but there's like a darker history here, and it's not all sunshine and rainbows. And the Jeju people are kind of tough. Like, they're tough people, they're loving people, but they've been through a lot. And I think that the way that the government and some museums present Jeju, it's not really true to the soul of the culture here.
I think a lot of that narrative, too, is created by a central government out of Seoul, and how that's projected onto Jeju identity. So other Koreans need to, like, latch on to that so that Jeju means that to them. I think for Jeju people themselves, they know the history, obviously. But I think, too, that there's, like, a promotion of a lot of the darker history. 4-3, which was the long massacre from 1947 to 1948 or whatever, where 30,000 Jeju residents were killed. I think that the government here does really recognize that, and when they were having the ceremonies commemorating it a month ago, it did seem like it was a history that's still alive for Jeju people, but I'm not sure that's reflected in how Korean people perceive it. Life is about production, not the consumption of things or egocentrism. So I like how you articulated that sense of values. What does it mean to you?
I think that the world is moving really quickly now, and it's so easy just to grow up consuming television and advertisements and like what's going to be my next big experience, and you can just go through life without producing anything, and you feel like this deep emptiness, you don't really know why. And I think that's just how modern life in a capitalist society is.
You wrote that art here is in direct contrast to the tourist lifestyle. What do you mean by that?
I think the tourists, the tourists who come to this island are like a burgeoning middle class from China, of Koreans, Westerners. You know, and traveling is a privilege. Not everyone can afford it. Tourism is a privilege, and so like the things, tourism is marketed towards people who have lots of money, who live a certain lifestyle, and I think that sometimes it can be kind of plastic and superficial, not well thought out. But I think that the art on that island comes from a more genuine place with more purpose. And it's local. It's being done in the villages with the people. True, lots of the artists are from the outside coming in, like from Seoul or Japan, but there's more of an interaction with the people in the villages from the artists, I think, and the artists are wanting to tell the Jeju people's stories here more. There's more of an interaction with the locals than the tourism with the locals.
And this contrasts a lot with the sort of more globalized Jeju that we see every day.
Mm-hmm.
So where do we see the effects of globalization and development and tourism and everything else? Where do we see Jeju going from here? Mm. What would you predict 5 years or 10 years down the road?
I do believe that Jeju is becoming Disneyland. I hate to say that, but I think that things are moving so quickly. Development is just exploding, and it doesn't seem like the government is really paying attention to the locals here. There's so much money coming in, and maybe they're getting a little crazy with it, and they don't see what's happening. I think there's going to be a huge backlash, and there already is, especially with the naval base protests that are happening. They're buying up all the land around the naval base so that they can be a presence to remind the naval base of, you know, where they're situated. And
the naval base is being built by the Korean government. Mm-hmm. In what's the town's name?
I'm not
Kumjong?
Sure. I'm not sure.
Okay. But this is pretty new, and there's been a lot of
controversy. Yeah, there's been people who've been living there for years, like almost a decade or something. Yeah, that's just one part of the bigger fight to preserve Jeju. I'm hoping that some things will happen where we can find a way to pressure the government to preserve the shrines and other structures on the island that have been here, you know, for hundreds of years. And but I think that development is going to win the battle. I mean, in the long run, I think we'll have some small victories, but you can't really slow down, I don't want to say progress, but development. I hope we can, but we'll see.
That's the Koreafile for this week. You can find new episodes up every Wednesday on iTunes and Stitcher, and as a feature contributor at blogtalkradio.org. You can find Anne's online work at jejujive.wordpress.com and in the travel section at jejuweekly.com. Tune in next week for a conversation with researcher Agnes Son on Korea's back-to-land movement. From Deoksu Village on Jeju Island, I'm Andre Goulet.